nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Wherever you look around the world, from the Middle East and the Mediterranean to our North Atlantic partners to Southeast Asia, it seems America is suffering a nightmare of reversals. And at a time when we live in a world of woes, of wars, of political upheavals, of natural disasters, and for millions of Americans, these disasters are also something that calls for American help, concern, comfort, and aid. It's about time we asked, where do we go from here? Have we lost our way? Where do we stand in the world? Do we have a sense of national will and national purpose anymore? And what role will America play in the future, if any? Or will it occur, as some historians are now beginning to say, that America is headed for its decline and its fall? Increasingly, voices of isolationism are heard in Congress, as a largely Democratic Congress vies for control, and many hopefuls stand in the wing hoping for the presidency in 1976. Yet Gerald Ford continually striving to ask for more money, presumably to help bail out some of the friends others say we have abandoned. It's a complex world, a trying world, a frightening and awesome world in which we live. And as we in the United States approach our 200th anniversary and reflect upon our comparatively brief history in this world, it's time to wonder, do we still have the spirit of 76? The unnerving events of recent weeks and months have sorely bruised and injured American pride and prestige around the entirety of this earth. In Indochina, the swift and almost uncontested communist offensive in South Vietnam raised an unsettling question. Had those 56,000 American lives and $170 billion in U.S. aid been spent all in vain? The government of Bantu proved much weaker than had been thought, and the fast fallback of his forces approached an all-out rout. Obviously, U.S. intelligence about Tu and his powers have been grievously faulty. First, the former imperial capital of Hue fell to the communists, and then so did five more provinces, bringing the total under their control to 13 out of 44. But the real shocker was the swiftness of the fall of Da Nang, South Vietnam's second-largest city and the one-time center of U.S. Marine operations in Vietnam. The announcement by Saigon officials that the city had been overrun by the communists marked the South's greatest single defeat of the war. The Thieu government had now abandoned or been forced from more than three-quarters of the country's territory. Vietnam is gone, and American prestige, if not military might, has suffered a devastating blow. Even the long beleaguered capital of Phnom Penh has fallen, another domino in the long and bitter struggle. The impact of the communist successes in Indochina was felt elsewhere in the region. Thailand ordered the withdrawal of all American servicemen within a year. And President Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines began reevaluating his government's relations with the United States, including the desirability of American bases on his soil. In the Middle East, Henry Kissinger's Mideast peace shuttle between Cairo and Jerusalem has collapsed. Fears of another war have replaced the bright hope for diplomatic breakthrough. The Secretary of State, visibly depressed and shaken, told a Washington news conference that widespread communist gains in South Vietnam and the threatened collapse of Cambodia weakened his authority to negotiate a new peace agreement between Israel and Egypt. The latest crisis in Southeast Asia could not have come at a worse time for the Secretary of State. Kissinger warned that the United States was about to deliberately destroy an ally by withholding American military aid from South Vietnam, and that America's global position was in peril. He said, and I quote, "The United States cannot pursue a policy of selective reliability. We cannot abandon friends," he said, "in one part of the world without jeopardizing the security of friends everywhere. In the Mediterranean, without question, we in the United States are facing the most serious trouble since 1945. The debacles in Vietnam and the Mideast point up the same lesson, that the United States and Western power generally is shrinking rapidly and permanently. In the Far East, I predict we have seen an end of any U.S. land involvement. In the Pacific and Indian Oceans, a naval presence might continue for a time. But the big question is how much influence that will guarantee. Meanwhile, you have to look at that in the light of the fact that President Anwar Sadat admitted recently that the opening of the Suez Canal is contrary to American interests, thus opening that gateway to the Indian Ocean to Soviet fleet units. American response to that? Well, probably none. What will happen then in Indonesia, the Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, in Australia and New Zealand? In the Mediterranean, even more drastic shifts may be coming. The supremacy the U.S. 6th Fleet once enjoyed has been challenged. The Soviet fleet there meant that this was no longer an American lake. Yet the 6th Fleet did play a vital role as NATO's southern flank. Turkey is making plans to close some or all of the U.S. bases in her country following the cutting off of U.S. military aid. The Turkish Foreign Minister Meli Esenbel was quoted as saying, "Congress cut off military aid to Turkey because American arms were used in the invasion of Cyprus last July." But the Turkish Foreign Minister said that U.S. aid was no favor to Turkey. For $90 million, a paltry sum by present-day standards, the U.S. and NATO are getting one of the best security bargains in the world, he said. Turkey controls the vital Dardanelles, exit from the Black Sea, and has permitted the installation of 20 American early warning listening and tracking stations. "Either some of your congressmen were not properly briefed," he said, "or they have done something irresponsible that has jeopardized the defense posture of the entire Western alliance." Our government, he went on, is now getting ready for the next step against these joint facilities. A list of steps is being drafted on a graduated scale. This is no bluff, believe me. He said, "We're not interested in aid programs that have expiration deadlines and which say, if you do not do thus and so, at the end of a certain time, you will be cut off without military aid. If you want a relationship based on the new rules, we would rather end the relationship," Esenbel said. Turkey is also threatening to build its own nuclear weapons and scale down its NATO commitments. Turkish Prime Minister Sadi Irmak, according to a newspaper interview, said, "Going nuclear is very dangerous for humanity, but if we have to go nuclear for our defense, we will." The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, already in considerable disarray because of Turkey, is facing a new perilous threat. The threat comes from Portugal, an important member of the alliance whose progressive swing to the left is posing a problem to the alliance's security and to the defense of its sensitive southwestern flank. The influence of communists in the ruling regime in Lisbon poses the question whether the alliance's vital military secrets can remain safe. Portugal's contribution to NATO is important because of the facilities the country offers to defense strategy. Outside Lisbon, important NATO communications and refueling facilities are concentrated in the alliance's present headquarters of the Command for the Iberian Atlantic. The Lajes base in the Azores is of considerable importance to Western defense strategy. It's already under negotiation. The denial of these facilities would be a serious blow to the entirety of NATO, not to speak of the outright threat that their availability to the Soviet Navy might pose. So at one end of the Mediterranean, Portugal is slipping. At the other end, Turkey. In between, Greece could leave, and Italy could, of course, follow the way of Portugal. And that leaves hardly one rock on which to anchor future U.S. strategies. Wherever we look, then, the once proud United States of America is besieged by mounting trials, setbacks, and defeats. And you have to ask the question, in the view of the dismantlement of empire following World War II, the withdrawal of Britain from a great empire into a tiny, third-rate country barely able to defend its own shores with British presence in most parts of the world now gone, then you look at the dismantlement of other colonial empires such as the Dutch, the Portuguese, the Belgians, and the like, and now you see even the United States of America dwindling in influence, in power, in its ability to guarantee protection to its allies and friends abroad, you have to ask the question, where is it all leading?
Plain Truth. Plain Truth. Plain Truth. The international publication of understanding. Information you need in today's changing society. Reports on meetings with national leaders. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. Plain Truth. The journal you should read. Garner Ted Armstrong's analysis of important national and global issues. Read Plain Truth every 2 weeks at no cost to you. For your free subscription, call 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444. Toll free. That's 800-423-4444. Plain Truth.
I hope you'll write for your current copy of The Plain Truth, this headline about Indochina's agony and the quotation right out of the book of Leviticus about your strength shall be spent in vain, underscores what I'm saying in this program, that the United States spent over 56,000 young American lives and over $170 billions in dollars, and now we see in the crushing defeat billions of dollars of materiel falling into the hands of the communist enemy. You can have your free copy if you will dial right now to the toll-free number 800-423-4444. If you live in California, Hawaii, or Alaska, dial direct to area 213. The number is 5775-225. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, for your free copy of The Plain Truth. We'll have it in the mail as quickly as our mail service can get it to you, which sometimes takes a little while, but hang in there. We'll get it to you as quickly as we can. Well, with setback after setback dogging the heels of the United States, President Ford recently tried to reassure the American people about the grim and disheartening situation we face.
I would not be frank and honest with you if I were to ignore the serious setbacks we have suffered in very recent weeks in our quest for peace in the Middle East, and more recently and more dramatically in Southeast Asia. No adversary or potential enemies of the United States of America should imagine that America can be safely challenged, and no allies or time-tested friends of the United States should worry or fear that our commitments to them will not be honored. Unfortunate confusion and changing situation in Southeast Asia should not give encouragement to our adversaries nor apprehension to our friends. We stand ready to defend ourselves and support our allies as surely as we always have.
However, in the light of Congress' refusal to vote the needed money that President Ford was asking for, you can't help but wonder what is the reaction among other allies or friends of the United States abroad. Mr. Ford said he is deeply concerned that some congressmen will seek to pay for added spending programs by dangerously stripping billions from the defense budget. At a time like this, he said nothing could be more short-sighted or devastating to our safety.
I reject the prophets of doom who see nothing but depression at home and despair abroad. I will reject any advice to pull down the stars and stripes and sail home from the seas of the world to the safe anchorage of San Diego Bay. If we do so, this anchorage will no longer be safe. You know it, and I know it.
No, no one likes to be a prophet of doom. Many people call me that because I talk about the facts of world conditions the way they really are. But shall we play a bizarre game of hide and go seek? Of hide our eyes from reality and the troubles we face in the world as well as domestically and at home? And then pretend that maybe if we don't repeat the bad facts to ourselves, if we don't talk about how bad things really are, maybe they will go away. I said many, many times during the very height of American involvement in Vietnam that our concern over Vietnam would finally be paled into insignificance alongside our concern over the Middle East, principally in the area of Israel and her Arab neighbors. And that is still true as we look at the writing of the final chapter of the agony and the bloodshed of South Vietnam. I still say, no matter our terrible shame and our deep concern, finally the Middle East will prove to loom far larger in our concern than has Vietnam. When you take a look at Britain and what has happened in the last few years, well, principally the last 20 years or so, in the historical perspective of following World War II, you have to wonder whether or not the United States is now following the lead of our sister, or is it brother, country of Great Britain. In 1945, Great Britain dominated over one quarter of the world's population. Britain controlled 13 million square miles of territory, a quarter of the Earth's land area. Its influence was felt the world over. The sun never set on the British Commonwealth. Once great far-flung empire had been shattered. And as you looked around the world, it included so much of the world, as you remember. There were the British Isles themselves, Canada, Australia, South Africa, the East African colonies formerly belonging to Germany, but which had been stripped away by the Treaty of Versailles and had fallen into the hands of the British, Tanzania, used to be called Tanganyika, Kenya colony, all of those. There were then the islands of the Mediterranean, Malta, there was Gibraltar, Egypt, the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. If you recall, Egypt and the Sudan were both under British control. At the southern reaches of the mouth of the Suez Canal, Britain ruled supreme. At the Mediterranean mouth of the Suez Canal, Britain ruled supreme. At the approaches to the Mediterranean itself, Britain controlled the Bosporus, Dardanelles, India, Ceylon, the big British naval base, what is now called Sri Lanka or Colombo, Ceylon, as it used to be, the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, the Straits of Malacca with Hong Kong, Singapore. The entirety of the world, it seemed, was girdled by the possessions of Great Britain and some of the most strategic of all the sea lanes. And in addition to that, even strategic land passes such as the Khyber Pass, ruled by Britain. Gradually after World War II, all of that was stripped away. A few little enclaves might still exist, such as Hong Kong, but these are few and far between. The Commonwealth today exists only on paper. The so-called New Commonwealth has no central foreign policy, no effective trade agreement, no single defense pact, and now the last flicker of light is about to go out. The British government has announced drastic cuts in men and materiel in the defense establishment in an effort to save Britain's ailing economy, about $10.8 billion over the next 9 years. She has already had to go hat in hand begging to the Arabs to support the British pound, to get borrowings up into the billions of dollars, and has been told in return by OPEC countries, at least the Arab ones, that they would not accept payment in British pounds but wanted heavy metal instead. The government of Britain has now formally conceded what the rest of the world long suspected, that Britain is no longer a world power able to keep the peace in remote corners of the globe. As Defense Minister Roy Mason said in announcing the cuts to the House of Commons, we have now to recognize the fact that our international policing is over. We can no longer afford to patrol the world's sea lanes. Again, I ask, are we in the United States seeing ourselves forced into the same position of such ignominious admissions before the world as have the British been forced to do? That we can no longer afford, we have neither the will, determination, or the money to police the rest of this world.
The richest, most powerful group of nations on Earth, the United States and British Commonwealth, are part of one of the most mysterious puzzles of all time. The prophecies of the Bible mention such small nations as Libya, Syria, and Ethiopia, but they seem to omit all reference to our peoples. How could such important nations be left out of inspired prophecy? This mysterious puzzle is unraveled in the full-length book, The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy. This book reveals the true identity of our peoples from the pages of your Bible. And yet it goes beyond past history and shows you what to expect in the future. For your free copy of The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
I hope you'll write for this book of the United States and British Commonwealth in prophecy and find out whether or not we are really identified in the pages of the Bible, and if so, what Bible prophecy says about us right now, today, and some of these very staggering reverses we are presently suffering. You can have it if you will dial right now the toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's anywhere outside California, Hawaii, or Alaska. If you live in one of those states and dial direct to area 213, the number is 577-5225, or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, in the United States. It's Box 44, Vancouver, BC, in Canada, and we'll have it on its way to you right away. The United States is, in fact, finding itself kicked out of some of its most important military bases and invited out of some of its most influential areas around the world. It has seemed to me, in retrospect and looking back upon the history of the last 20 years or so, that the United States was trying to play the part of empire without really stating that that was the case ever since World War II. If a natural calamity or disaster occurred somewhere, it was our problem. Wherever you see people starving, or you see drought or famine, or you see flood or typhoon, America always went to their aid. A little struggling country that was threatened with an overtake by communism, the United States stood there. As Mr. Kennedy said, as I began the program with that very statement about how we would come to the aid of any little country, wherever it was on the face of the earth. It was our problem. We inherited it. If it was threatened from starvation, such as India, maybe back in the middle of the 1960s it was, that we put to sea the largest peacetime armada the world had ever seen, and shipped emergency food reserves of the United States to the people of India, where about 50% of it fell into the hands of black marketeers or was destroyed because of poor storage facilities, dock facilities and the like, or was lost to rats. Yet we nevertheless drained our own national strength to try to help these people survive. We have acted like we thought we were the empire of the United States. We were the American Empire. We have tried to shoulder, like Atlas, the problems of the entirety of the world. And now it's becoming clear, as the trend of isolationism has begun to rear its head, that the American people are jaded, tired, and exhausted with fulfilling that role, that we simply are not willing anymore to commit not only troops, but even money, to causes which we are not sure will succeed. I think not without at least some amount of merit, because of detente with the Soviet Union, some reporters were entirely within what you would say would be correct journalistic procedure to ask the president of recent date, why had we not just allowed Ho Chi Minh to take over in the first place, and then once it was fully communized, simply began to pursue detente with the country and maybe then begin cultural and social exchanges and trade. You know, there's a little more truth to that than a lot of people would think, because Ho Chi Minh was, in fact, a Vietnamese nationalist. He was educated in Paris, France, that's to be sure. He was a communist, that's also to be sure. But nevertheless, he was a nationalist first. And even though he would have instituted a lot of communistic agrarian reforms and the like, and the parcel, you know, kind of piecemeal cutting up of the country and giving into the hands of the peasants all that they intended to do with their five-year plans of rehabilitation of the country. Do you know that had we pursued the policies of the Eisenhower administration, which were actually to support Ho Chi Minh in the beginning rounds of our involvement in Vietnam, instead of the idea that any communist government, such as that of Tito, whom we virtually forced into the hands of the Soviet Union, who could have gone an independent course away from the Soviet Union, as some other Eastern satellites might have done with a different American foreign policy. But you know, if that had been true in Vietnam, we would not have spent those 56,000 lives. We wouldn't have spent that more than $170 billion. We wouldn't have dumped more than three times the tonnage of bombs expended during World War II against the Axis powers. And it's very possible that South Vietnam could have become a Chinese and a Soviet problem instead of an American problem. And those two powers would have squabbled and agonized over Vietnam and possibly even committed troops. It could have worked out very different. But then, of course, hindsight is, after all, 2020. Well, now you have to look at it in the overview. On the one hand, you see President Ford desperately trying to buttress our allies by saying we will not abandon them. On the other hand, you see the American public, the American Congress, absolutely unwilling to commit any more arms and troops to struggles abroad. You have to ask whether or not the United States has been trying to play the part of ancient Rome, trying to guarantee through our nuclear umbrella a kind of a Pax Americana along the lines of Pax Romana of ancient history. And we are now proving we are simply unable to do that, that we cannot supply a fear of the United States and its power to hostile neighbors where we have friends. We cannot supply by dint of our arms and our money, or either by political treaties or guarantees, or by direct troop involvement, a territorial integrity to any one of our allies or friends. We have proved that in Vietnam. We proved it in the case of nationalist China. We proved it in a broader sense, perhaps, but differently, in Korea. We have been trying to enforce upon the world the American brand of peace, and not all the world wants the American brand of peace. We can't do that unless we are willing to maintain legions. And America does not have legions. We have neither the strength of, call it the moral courage, or call it the mental makeup. We are not the kind of people who exult and glory in war. So we are not legionnaires in our heart and our minds. And we cannot send our young men to fight piecemeal battles for limited objectives for short durations of time in little country after country in Africa or Southeast Asia or Central or South America ad infinitum from now on out to the end of foreseeable future. We simply will not and cannot do that. I think it's time we began to look at our future course and reappraise it dramatically. Where do we go from here? Will the United States simply quit this role of trying to solve the problems of the world wherever they occur, whether they're natural calamity or political calamity? Will we withdraw into a new kind of isolationism until forced into a war because of an attack of some sort along the lines of Pearl Harbor? Or will we continue to spend our strength as we have done so futilely in Korea and in South Vietnam? If you want to get a handle on the overview and what Bible prophecy says is surely going to occur to our peoples, then you need to write for this booklet called The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy and receive every single 2 weeks this tabloid edition of The Plain Truth. It's absolutely free of charge. The current number deals with Indochina's agony and especially with the Middle East and why those talks collapsed and what's going to happen in the Middle East and what Bible prophecy says. It's free of charge if you dial right now to that toll-free number, 800-423-4444, or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.